Saxone, episode 6, Dilms. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you the topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and also bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn how to address them. Joining me on the line, as always, the 2015 Canadian and 2016 U.S. National Champ, JT. How's it going, sir?
Yay!
Woo! Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. What's up?
Oh, Canada. Not a lot.
It's like a hockey game
normally,
in here.
I feel like every time we start one of these things, I'm like, I just mowed my lawn today. I did not mow my lawn today.
Neither did I. That's amazing. This might be the first time we've done a recording day where neither of us mowed the lawn.
Could be.
It could be.
Had great weather for it. I just didn't bother doing it.
No, mine's good. Also, we have the 2016 Canadian Nats Top 4. Randy, what's up, sir?
Hey, not much. How are you doing, Dave?
I am good. I'm doing pretty well. Had a pretty normal day at work today, which is actually nice. A pretty quiet day, which is crazy on the last day of a quarter. It's never quiet, but here we are. And I am 2015 U.S. Nats Top 8 and 2016 PDC State Runner-Up Dave. As you may have surmised. So, elephant in the room first, JT, obviously congrats on a very solid performance at Nationals. Of course, the whole reserve pool team did an amazing job at Origins, but they're not all here right now. You are. That finals game, man, was just like a Dice Masters clinic for those of us watching at home. I mean, really, really
on
good
on both sides
good stuff
of the table. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You guys, that was a rocking game.
Mike was crazy good, man.
Absolutely.
That dude knows how to play, and he did not make it easy. Even though I had the advantage to go first, right? Like, that was not easy. He was prepared to win going second. So,
I do wish I could have been there cheering everybody on, though. I certainly won't complain about being in Disney World.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, you know, I was meeting Stitch and Chewbacca and Tinkerbell and all that kind of stuff.
Making trades with Jawas and what else?
Yeah, trading with Jawas. The Jawas love the Dice Masters dice. If you're going to Disney World anytime soon, you can meet with Jawas in the Star Wars launch bay, which is kind of the precursor, some little memorabilia and meet and greets and stuff to the big Star Wars stuff they'll have in a couple years. But there are Jawas there, and you can trade them stuff. Well, we gave them a Dice Masters die. They looked at it, ran over to a table, started rolling at it, looking at it, clapped. I think it was it was a blue die. Was it the Blue Lantern Flash? I'm pretty sure it was. And they loved it. And then we got junk in return. It looked like the body of like an R2-D2, an astromech droid. So yeah, so that was fun. But you guys, it looked like you guys were having fun too. My heart was with you. So yeah, fantastic. Origins is such a fun con. If you haven't gone, even if you're not the kind of person who would be interested in playing in that kind of event, go to Origins. It is so much fun. Just all the stuff that's there. You know, last year I went to see the Dice Tower live recording, and I'm a big fan of that show. And there's just so much to do. Go to that con, even if you're not interested in the competitive Dice Masters events.
For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, so before we get into today's topic, I'd like to remind everyone, if you like this show, please give us a review on iTunes. It's going to help others find it. Two more 5-star reviews did pop up, so I'd like to recognize Arjo Neal and Z_Wangchang, which is like a great name. You guys rock. Keep them coming, please. It does help us get the word out. It helps us get a little bit of exposure out there. We are in summer mode, and some people take that like, kick back, relax, don't think about it. We don't have competitive stuff happening for a little bit. I say, one, gear up for those rainbow drafts in the next competitive season for sure. But there's no shortage of level up topics. This is the best time, I think, to focus internally because there aren't any major tournaments to prepare for until we have PDC regionals coming late August, right? This is a great time to look inside and improve some fundamentals.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, this is the time you can get, you can run reps without pressure. And those reps are going to get you you know, you're going to play like you practice. So if you get the opportunity to practice honing some big picture skills, now's the time to do it without the pressure of big tournament season.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, right.
Just to echo that. I mean, now is the time to, you know, try out those teams that have been on your back burner. Now that you can, you know, everyone's sick of playing Bard and playing Lantern Ring, set those aside, play something else, and yeah, step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, because, you know, whatever you're going to play, the fundamental concepts of the game still remain the same, right? I mean, none of the internal stuff and the decision-making skills that you're working to develop or thinking about your misplays so that you can, you know, log in those, keep in that notebook and whatever else you want to do, none of that changes based on the team that you're playing. It's all fairly constant. I mean, the best thing about this show is that the topics tend to be evergreen. I guess the drawback to that is at some point, there are only so many evergreen topics. So I think the every 2 weeks format helps us space them out enough so that by the time we repeat ourselves, people will forget that we said it in the first place. But yeah, those things are always applicable. Today, we're going to talk about one of those. And this is one that I think that we've been looking to do for a while. Part of it was just trying to find some good resources and a good way to frame it. And just some stuff happened through pure happenstance. I participate. My workplace is pretty cool. I know that's tough to say for a lot of people, in that they do a mentorship program. Yes, you don't need to be Ty Lopez with a YouTube ad to have a mentor in my garage.
I have no idea what you're even talking about.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk after the video. I got this new Lamborghini here. My house in the Hollywood Hills. Yeah, it's terrible.
Did he just say
terrible.
Hills with a Z?
I think he
Hollywood
did.
Hills. Yes, I certainly did, and I think he does too. You don't need to be Ty Lopez to have a mentor. They have a cool mentorship program at work. I'm working with somebody who I very much respect, and it's been pretty cool. And we were looking at some different like leadership competencies, and one of them came up. It was manages ambiguity, and I was looking through some of this stuff about, you know, working under ambiguous circumstances and thinking, oh, I struggle here, I'm okay here, and I got to this one paragraph, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Till. And I started to see more real-world connections. So let's step way back here. Tilt. It will lose you games, so we need to avoid it. So let's talk about, like, what it actually is. Tilt is a term that comes from the game of poker. And when you're on tilt, that's when you play poorly. You make a single play you maybe know is a bad strategy, or you're trying to force a strategy that's no longer going to be possible just because your emotions are interfering with your ability to think clearly. So that is what tilt is. It can be inward. It can be outwardly expressed. Sometimes you know somebody is tilted just by looking at them, but not always. You don't always know that. So what are some situations that make us tilt? I can think of a few for me, for sure. What do you guys got? What makes you tilt?
Sure. I'll go first here. You know, I've run into people at work who, they might be a good worker, they might get their stuff done, but if they've got just, you know, a bad attitude and they just, you know, they're mean-spirited, cocky, arrogant, think that they're the greatest thing in the world, and just, you know.
Randy, you might be getting run over by a train. I would watch out.
I did. I narrowly avoided that train there.
Oh, thank God. We're keeping that in the show. Go ahead.
I've worked with people just with bad attitudes, and I've realized I would rather have someone who might not be quite as good at their job, but they're nice, they're going to put in the effort, they're a positive attitude. And the same is in Dice Masters. I'd rather play against someone who has a positive attitude than someone who is cocky, arrogant, and just an all-around jerk.
And yet, you play me all the time.
I do.
So when somebody sits across from you, Randy, and acts like that, does that kind of mess with your head a little bit? You realize that, like, does that behavior kind of impact the way you play? Is that where the tilt comes in?
Yes, it does, because it lights a fire in me that makes me say, I want to humble this person. I want to put them in their place and make them realize they're not the greatest thing in the world, that this is such a game of luck. And yeah, and then I get a little over aggressive with my play and maybe take risks that I shouldn't take. And so everyone stop being jerks and I wouldn't tilt so much.
What about you, Randy? What's a tilting situation for you?
Well, that was Randy.
Or JT, you too. other Ohio guy.
It's easy for me to get distracted. Randy and I were actually playing yesterday, and I got a call from my wife, and we had a sick kid, so I gotta pack up and leave. I was, I told my wife, all right, give me just a couple minutes and I'll get on my way. I hung up the phone and I had been in the middle of my turn. I was totally lost about where I was. And Randy just looked at me and he's like, dude, you're on tilt. I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about something else right now. And so if I get distracted, then try and come back to where I am and catch up. That can be pretty challenging.
I think I told him, hurry up and keep going your turn. Mess up then.
Yeah. So, and we'll probably talk a little bit about recovering from tilt, but getting distracted, and we talked about this before, right? Like, you have a plan for your turn, you're working through the plan for your turn, and I will routinely, I'll have a plan, and if something changes and I miss it, and I'm going through, and then I realize, oh, it's too late, I did something I shouldn't have done because I missed something earlier. I was distracted. Whatever it was, and that's the kind of thing that gets me on tilt. I'm really highly self-critical. So if I make a mistake and I identify it as a mistake, that will inevitably lead me to be on tilt. And those are those are things that are going to happen. So you just kind of have to be prepared for them when they do.
Yeah, JT, I'm glad you went there, and that's very similar for me as well. You know, when it's a situation, if there's a misplay that I recognize that I made, especially when it's when it's too late to do anything about it, when I feel like I'm on the cusp and my dice aren't cooperating, and I think there's even that's the way I jotted it down in my notes: the dice don't cooperate. I think even the way you phrase that, like, the dice are uncooperative, it just has such a negative connotation. Like I'm giving emotional personified attributes to the dice that they obviously don't have. And I think that's even telling about the terms that I put it in that show you that that's a time when I might tilt. Those are tough situations. But I'm also glad you talked about the part about being self-critical, because that really goes into some of the I won't say like revelations that I've had, because I certainly haven't had the time to put things into practice yet for me, but I definitely struggle with tilt at times. The worst I think for me is when I feel like I have no control over what's happening. And with the amount of variance in Dice Masters, that can really be that way. But like, my opponent executes something that I have absolutely no answer for, and I might as well not even take my next turn is how it feels. Right. But it doesn't always have to be that like emotional frustration, flustered thing. It can also be that, like you described, that distraction, and it lets you get away. And then you start again making suboptimal decisions because you don't know what you're doing. But that feeling of a lack of control, of a lack of agency, is one that certainly messes with me at times. So what I think I've learned here. And JT, given what you were saying, I think you especially might agree with this, is that what I think you might agree with me with here, JT, is that tilt actually comes a little bit from perfectionism. Maybe not like super high levels of perfectionism necessarily, but definitely a degree of it. You said yourself, you tend to be self-critical. You're a very well-educated person. JT, I know you obviously have high standards for yourself. I think that's true of all three of us. We've all talked about different aspects with our family lives, with our work lives, or whatever else. All three of us clearly have high expectations for ourselves, and that can cause a degree of tilt, because we're faced with uncertainty. We have a plan, And now the way the dice rolled, the way that we drew, something our opponent did that we have no control over, all of these things now throw uncertainty into our plan. And now we have really been faced, now we have uncertainty-driven stress, yeah. I think is the way that I would put it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, look, uncertainty is the kind of thing that drives us nuts in other areas of life too, right? Like, so it only makes sense that that would apply to the game as well. Right, you go for a job interview, you think you did well, you're not sure, and you don't know until you either get a call or an email, one way or the other, right? So that those uncertainty in relationships or in jobs or, you know, finances or whatever, like those are the kinds of things that cause anxiety and lead to, you know, questionable decisions one way or another. So if that happens in the rest of life or business or what have you, why wouldn't it happen in a game?
Exactly. You know, and some of the things you said right there are could almost be lifted from the page in this this packet that I have here, from this management training stuff. Let's see here. It's not uncommon to get stressed when dealing with increased ambiguity. Stress increases the chances, tell me if this sounds familiar, that you'll respond to conditions and people more emotionally. You might lash out. You might close down. You might berate yourself, go into panic mode. Right? All of those things are things that happen. Now, panic mode sounds very extreme, but I think there's those times that we sit there and we're trying to think things out. And like isn't it funny how like adding very small numbers like this is very simple in any situation that's not in a tournament with something on the line or where you're not sure what you're doing going forward, all of a sudden like 2 + 3 + 6 + 8 becomes like really difficult when you're trying to find out if you have lethal, you know, and all those little things, if you let them affect you, can get there.
Yeah. You know? I mean, those are the kind of things that lead you to parallax 5 times on one turn.
Yeah. I saw that.
Not that anyone would have done that on the stream in a game that mattered.
And clearly no one associated with the reserve pool.
No, that would never ever happen. So let's look at then where perfectionism fits in with this, because perfectionism, I saw an article on Psychology Today that called it the ultimate self-defeating behavior. So because perfectionism rigidifies behavior, it constricts you when you really actually need to be more flexible and comfortable with ambiguity. It makes it difficult to adapt because all of a sudden you kind of get that square peg in the round hole mentality, or you just abandon the plan altogether and start doing whatever. And you're not sure what you don't take the time to think about it. You act emotionally instead of act, from a place of thought and reason.
Mm. Yeah. 'Cause reason will go out the door real quick when perfectionism trump, like, if your focus is on things that you ultimately can't control, then your ability to logic through problems or reason through problems goes out the window, right? Because now you're responding, you're reacting rather than responding, and so mm-hmm. your reaction is driven more by lower functioning brain, right? Like it's gut response. It's not thinking through something for and evaluating consequences.
Well, exactly. You know, I was looking at a poker website that I think was called Ante Up, and the sentence was right there. What happens when a perfectionist makes a mistake? They tilt. And so I think when you start to put some of the different pieces together, how a perfectionist feels like they need to be able to act. They're worried about some of the risks of judging behavior, just making a mistake, and it's deemed a mistake. And it's easy to feel like I need to have all the information, but then the dice come up in a way that you don't expect, and maybe you can't make a play. You don't want to believe you can make a play, but maybe you can't, or you know, you feel like you can't, or you feel like all of your decisions are bad. And instead of ever thinking, like taking that step back and saying, okay, this is not ideal, but how do I at least increase my equity here? You just say, all these decisions stink. I'll buy this pass, go, you know? And that makes it super difficult. Like, you can't make good decisions in an uncontrollable circumstance then.
Yep. Yeah.
Like,
that brings us back to variance, right?
Yep. Right. Because you pick the dice that you're putting in your bag. You don't pick what you draw or how they roll. You only pick, like, the dice that you have brought with you and then bought off of their card. And I mean, it can go one way or another, like, so many different times. You know, Randy, I hate to bring this up, but, right, like, our game at U.S. Nationals.
Oh, you jerk. You know?
I'm sorry.
I'm on tilt.
But, like, we had the same... you know I love you. We had, like, the same deck, and my dice roll slightly different from how your dice roll. We didn't do, you know, like, that's what the game is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are you going to do with that? And some people can't handle that.
It's funny. All these competitive games, you know, Dice Masters, Magic, it's... You try to make your teams operate as consistently as possible. Like, that's typically how you win. When you, you know, limit the variance, control the, increase the consistency, and so you get exactly what you expect, that's usually mm-hmm. the end goal. And that little bit of variance, you know, can cause this tilt, but tilt is talked about, I think, pretty rarely when it comes to strategies for collectible, you know, gaming of any kind. I mean, we're aware of it, and I think most people are aware, but I don't think it's something that a lot of people prepare for.
You know, I completely agree with you. I don't listen to a ton of podcasts for other games. I listen to a few. I know I've mentioned Limited Resources a few times before, and Marshall Sutcliffe and the great work that he does with that show. And really the, not necessarily within Magic, but just as a gamer, he's the kind of gamer I aspire to be. He comes from a poker background, and he's very good at looking internally and not letting emotion take the reins. But everybody you're never going to eliminate the feeling of tilt. But they're one of the few places, like if you go on some of the subreddits, you'll hear people talk about a little anxiety or tilt, some of the subreddits, some of the forums, but you don't see a ton of articles. But I think it's probably like the biggest reason after, you know, poor deck construction and poor piloting skill, I think tilt has got to be one of the biggest reasons that people lose games. Because even if you've developed your piloting skill to a certain point, something goes wrong and you start like going bananas and your animal brain takes over, all of a sudden you're going to be back to that poor pilot because you're not making good decisions. You know, it has a great way of reverting you to previously fixed or improved behavior.
Yeah, and so I guess with all that said, what are the things that you do, Dave, to identify when it's going on?
Okay, so I mean, like, I think first you have to realize that it's impacting you. And there are a couple of things that I've looked at. And again, like I said, I'm no expert. This is a work in progress. This is the prime example of a show that we bring because it's something that we're working through. And we want to, we've done some research. We want to talk it out with each other and bring it to you and really start a greater discussion here. Maybe hopefully as productive as the first episode that we did of this season, where everybody was making comments like, yeah, you know what? I have this flaw and whatever else. Like, this is, you know, this is real talk. This is sharing time. Like, I can play like a moron sometimes because I go on tilt. It happens, not just with Dice Masters, with other games. Ask my wife. You know, I tilt a little bit in Galaxy Trucker when she flips the timer sooner than I'm ready to when I'm building my ship, because I want my ship to look so good. But that's not what that game's about. But that's what I want it to be about. So you have to look for these things in yourself, and you know, whether it's with Dice Masters at work or whatever. I think the first thing is, like, look at the emotional factor. When you start to feel that frustration or that little headache or whatever else, however it manifests on you, you got to know how you're feeling and you got to admit it to yourself. I think another sign would be some negative self-talk, a little bit of berating yourself or other things like that. I think sometimes that can be really easy You know, you make a mistake and you kind of start like, oh man, I just stink at this. Like, what am I even thinking here? You know, you might feel like a fraud, a little bit of imposter syndrome, perhaps even. And then there's your outward reactions too. Like, what do you do? Do you pound the table? I hope not. Do you flip the table? Let's really not do that. Do you, you know, does the tone of your voice change? Like, do you clench your fists? Like, look at yourself and think about how you feel. You got to recognize that it's impacting you before you can do it. And, you know, maybe even like, if you're going to start a journal and log your misplays and things like that to play better, maybe you also want to log how you feel after different games that you play. And start to kind of track so you can figure out what happened in this game and how did it make me feel. And then you can kind of start to find some of those triggers too. So I think it really starts with like knowing that it's manifesting. The interesting thing for me, I don't know about you two, you can speak to this in a second here. It manifests very differently for me depending on who I'm playing with or what I'm doing. Like, for example, if I'm playing a game with my wife, whom I love very much, obviously we're very, very close. So I don't feel as inhibited, but if I'm at a game store, I feel like, gosh, all these people I don't know, and I want to be allowed to come back here, right? Like, I don't think my wife's going to kick me out. I think the game store probably would.
You're right. Like, the company you're in definitely can affect what the manifestation of tilt looks like. And, you know, I think... particularly for me, you know, I do so much, you know, trying to think ahead in the competitive environment that, not seeing something, not, you know, like I wrote this up in the article where I you know, kind of live blogged, watching my matches after the fact, with Mike. And, there are two things that kind of stand out to me. Number one was forgetting that he had a dwarf wizard in his bag, and what that felt like, seeing it come out, and like, oh, I completely forgot about that. How did I forget about that? That's terrible. I can't afford to do that. Like, and then watching him parallax it and seeing, well, why doesn't he just use the bolts to kill my dwarf wizard? Well, because, you know, because then I can ramp. And so, like, he sees this all, and I'm just playing catch up while I watch him work, because I was thrown off because I forgot about something. Mm-hmm. And then the other time that I'm thinking about is when I had to parallax my dwarf wizard two times with Oracle out. And so, you know, I spent 4 energy to get dwarf wizards. Like, you know, it's easy to feel like, well, if this doesn't happen, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And then I don't know. Like, it snowballs. That's, I think, the thing that really is dangerous about tilt, is that it snowballs, or it can anyway, unless you keep it in check. But those were really like internal processes. So I don't know that there was a ton of outward reaction, at least not at the table at the time. But for me, you know, in that setting, it was real easy to identify that it was going on, you know, internally, even if others watching weren't able to necessarily see it.
I would say you do a very good job of appearing composed, even when internally you might not be. Which is a good thing, because at least your opponent doesn't know that they have you on tilt, because sometimes that can be valuable information. I strive to be the same way in a competitive environment, and, you know, in a more private environment, I'm not always so composed. Or when I'm playing Overwatch and, you know, for no reason, our only healer switches off of a healer. Anyway, we won't talk about that. Randy, how about you?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I know, like, the few times that I've, like, really been put on tilt, I mean, we have this website, we have this podcast. I'm a pretty introverted person, but people are like, oh my gosh, you're Randy from the Reserve Pool, nice to meet you. And so I try to be, you know, friendly and outgoing, even though that's, you know, outgoing isn't really my nature. And so when I, you know, set up to play against someone, I'll try to be outgoing. Like, hey, you know, I'm Randy. You know, you are, and, you know, introduce myself and ask them how they're doing at the, you know, the tournament and whatnot. And you can usually tell pretty quick if someone, you know, is in jerk mode or not. And I think I shut down. I just think, okay, they're being a jerk. That means I don't have to put up this friendly front anymore. And it's just everything is internalized. Everything goes pretty, you know, blank look. Just everything is inside then. And I mean, that being said, it's not like I get angry at the table.
No.
And
it doesn't have to be. It's not necessarily angry.
Yeah. But yeah, like I don't know how well my opponent can, like, notice if I'm on tilt or not. Like I said, because I tend to get quieter and shut down when I'm, you know, leaning towards that way. So I don't know.
Right. Well, and some people are just like that at tournaments too. So they might never know, because some people are just quieter. You know, you got a lot of people, you don't know everybody.
Yeah.
I think as gamers, we're all a pretty diverse bunch, and I think we're used to dealing with people who are both very extroverted and very introverted in a large variety of ways too. So I would say too, I've never seen you appear very outwardly tilted. So, you know, that's pretty cool. So once you kind of know how it's impacting you, that's one thing. Because then if you don't know how it impacts you, you can't like know that you're on tilt. And then you want to figure out, like, what are some of your triggers? There could be times when you don't know what to do. You're afraid of a mistake. You're afraid of the consequences of an action, or maybe you just lack the confidence to act. And I think there's a lot of crossover between all of those types of situations, right? You know, don't know what to do is my dice came up in a completely unexpected way, or the board state is just a way that I didn't expect it to develop this way, and I don't know what to do. I know I'm a champion of talking about making decisions, as many decisions as possible before you get there. So that, you know, if a weird thing comes up, you kind of already have an idea of what to do, but you can't plan for everything. And that's difficult, but like, you're going to be put, even if you do a great job deck building and a great job play testing and planning and looking at different things and analyzing, there's still going to be situations where, that you did not plan for. I mean, there are so many permutations and combinations when we're dealing with six-sided dice, and the variety of six-sided dice that we have. So there's that too. I think of afraid of a mistake or afraid of consequences kind of goes back to, right? Like, I don't know that this part is necessarily tilt, but I think we talked about earlier when you sit there and you think you might have lethal, or you think you might have a play, and you're like, you're counting things and you're moving dice around, and then you start to feel like, man, I am like playing so slow and my opponent has to be like really angry at me right now. And then you lose count and you start counting again and different things like that. I think that those sorts of situations can contribute to tilt, especially if you're not sure what you're doing or if you feel flustered from the eyes around you. And then that can all impact confidence. So I think those are just a few of the many potential triggers. I think uncertainty or ambiguity is a big one, though.
Yeah, definitely. And as you're talking through those, like, that's how tilt snowballs, right? Like, you go from, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do, because I'm maybe afraid of what will happen if I make this choice. And so then I'm not really confident in making that choice. And so then I'm back to, I don't know what to do. And that's that cycle that just snowballs out of control. As you're talking, I actually started thinking about drafting and how, like, if everyone at the table has already selected their card from a pack, and I'm still looking, like, then everyone starts to look at me and say, well, dude, we're ready to move on. Like, what's your main issue here? You know, you're only holding three cards. You just got to pick one. Like,
I know it sucks, but take the Supergirl and pass the rest.
You know, like, there's so many things that can trigger, and so, you know, sometimes you might be triggered to begin to tilt just because someone's looking at you, or they're waiting on you, or you know they're tapping their fingers, or you know, playing with their dice bag, and you know it's your turn to act, and you know you haven't selected what you're going to do, and then that snowball just starts. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think knowing in advance what your triggers are can help you even see them coming, right? Like, uh-oh, here comes a big swing. It's going to leave me behind. I'll have control of the board, but, you know, I might be down 17-4, and that's not where I want to be, and that's going to put me on, you know, like, if you can see that coming and identify it and know that particular trigger is going to occur, you can start to prepare for it a little better.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. You know, while you were saying that, I also was thinking of some other scenarios too, like when you part of tilt is suboptimal decisions, but another part of tilt is forcing your plan that's now no longer viable, and that goes back to inflexibility and ambiguity. So like being unwilling to make tactical decisions within your broader plan. Like maybe you can't go directly from point A to B. Maybe now you need to go A, B, C, D, E, and you get there a slightly different way, but you can still get there. And some people just want to keep pounding in that same decision. I think self-pressure is another big side of it. Like if you come in with a high expectations for yourself and you get down a little early in a game, that can like internally feel pretty bad. It's almost like having a high need to feel to be right, but it's a little different because this is more from your own expectations. Like I know one thing that sometimes I struggle just a little bit with is when somebody wants to play a game and they want to pull it off the shelf and it's a game I'm really good at. I feel like I'm really good at this game. I'll either feel like a little bit like, hey, I don't know if I really want to play it because I'm good at it, and part of it is it might impact them and they won't want to play the game if I crush them. Another part of it is I'm really good at it and I'm going to feel really, really frustrated if like they get the jump on me because I feel like I should know this game better than this other person. Not that I know better or I'm smarter or a better person, a better human being than that other person, but I feel that I have higher skill at this particular game or activity that we're doing.
Do you mean like when you qualify for the U.S. Nationals one year and you decide to teach your friend this game and he goes on and wins a Canadian national championship?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't generally ever feel that here because the tournaments that I've gone to, everybody has just been so nice and gracious. And then for the most part too, they're strangers and you just can't make any assumptions. You know, when I go down to, I've gone down to Truby Store in Morgantown several times and just played against so many great people there. And I know he's got a really good crew, at his store and that you cannot take anything for granted, sitting across from anybody. And I think it's different when it's a competitive game. You start to expect that, hey, this person sitting across me is probably no slouch. And I think that can help that. And probably what I need to do is then bring that attitude in some of my non-competitive games. Because I don't think I let it affect me. But there's that little twinge in the corner of my mind, like, oh boy. You know? So, triggers. Knowing what causes you to trigger into tilt is super important. And then I think you just need to start to take small steps to find your equilibrium. I mean, part of it is taking a long view. You know, it U.S. Nationals in 2015, in the qualifiers, I did not perform the way that I hoped I would in the first qualifier. My deck was based around never really went off. I finished 3-2, but it was a weaker 3-2. And I started talking with Randy and Evan and kind of re-strategized and, you know, went back to some of the other decks that we were talking about. Ended up, you know, switching back to the same thing that Randy was doing, the High Hopes team that we had talked about several weeks earlier, and then obviously qualified for Nationals the next day with that team, went 4-1 in the evening. I was a little bit tilted coming off of that, but there was also the part where like, crap, a lot of the cards are back at the room. If I'm going to retool this deck, like we need to fly. So there was like the little bit of taking the time away from the place we were at, the venue, and also like the the absolute urgency of last-minute pressure, having to get there, switch the cards out, and get back before the next qualifier began. But taking a step back certainly helped. I think that's part of it. I think another thing is, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this one specifically, you don't need to figure out your entire turn immediately. Like, start to break some things down into steps. Like, say, figure out what you definitely want to do, and do that, or at least, like, say, okay, now let's imagine that I've done this. What do I definitely want to do next? Like, start to figure out what you know you need to do and get those decisions out of the way, so that you can start to, like, you can break it down, basically, just baby steps.
Yeah, I think a perfect example of that was a few of those turns in the third game of my match with Mike in the finals a couple weeks ago. Like, there was a turn where I knew I needed to steal all of his energy. It was right after he bought the Bard in game three. I knew I needed to steal all of his energy with my Thieves. I didn't know if I was going to end up with both Thieves in the field and be able to fabricate. But I did know that I definitely wanted to steal all his energy. And so I focused on doing that. And then as I got closer did I look and think, okay, what do I need to do to end up with both Thieves in the field so that I can fabricate? And then I was looking at, all right, what do I have left over that I can ramp with if that's the direction that I end up going, or taunt, or whatever. Like, taking a small step to move in that direction is what we needed to do, what I needed to do, to be able to move. And so you take one small step, and then you take another, and then you take another, and, you know, I think one of the things that helps me in those situations is, I listened to a number of podcasts about leadership, and this comes from one of those. And in situations where there's uncertainty, one thing that you cannot sacrifice is clarity. And so, whatever you think your objective is, be completely clear with yourself about it. You've got to be able to be, like, you cannot sacrifice clarity in the midst of uncertainty. You just can't, because being completely clear about something is what will drive your ability to act and move forward even when things are uncertain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. What do you think about that, Randy? Like breaking it down like that. Have you ever tried that, or is that kind of how you already go through it?
I mean, that comes with, you know, all the reps. That's when you're making those decisions. You're figuring out which ones are the best when you're doing all your reps in the, you know, the casual games leading up to. I know I sat down with JT yesterday to play a game at our local store, and I built a team for a friend of ours, but I hadn't played this team yet. So I, you know, wanted to, you know, kind of give him the pointers on how to pilot it, but I figured maybe I should try pilot it once before I tell him what to do. And so I sit down across from JT, and, you know, I won the roll off to go first, and I roll four dice, and I look at my card like, okay, what on earth do I need to do first to get, you know, where I want to be turn four or five? And I mean, it took me probably a good, you know, I mean, 30 seconds doesn't sound like a long time, but just 30 seconds of staring at the cards and thinking, okay, this is where I want to be, so this is the first piece I need, you know, to build that, you know, for a couple turns from now. And it's, if something can throw you off of that decision-making, I mean, that's bad news.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's a great way to go, because anything, whether you're talking about lesson planning or anything else, speaking as a teacher now, you're always starting with the idea, where do I want to go? You can't figure out how you're going to get there until you know what the destination is. So I think that's absolutely the right way to think. I think another way to help with finding a little bit of an equilibrium is recognizing sometimes this perfectionism and this difficulty with uncertainty and ambiguity and variance, it's because you're collecting more information than you actually need to try to make a fault-free decision. And maybe you feel like, oh, I still see where this could be in error, still could be a mistake. So you look for more info and you do the math again and you look at other combinations. When in actuality, there may not be like a 100% perfect play that gets you there. You need to start to balance your thinking with action. Because one part of a tilt-ish behavior, I think, though I don't know if this is specifically under the definition of tilt, is sort of being Hamlet, right? The whole thing that did Hamlet in that play was that he hesitated to act until when he finally did act, it was way too late, right? That was the whole thing with Hamlet. And I'll tease my dad about that sometimes when he's trying to make a decision about a big purchase. Like, well, it's time for him to upgrade his iPhone. And he has questions about the new one because I'm an upgrade cycle ahead of him. And he has questions about the new, oh, we got to sit down and talk about this or whatever else. And he'll think some more and he'll read something in Consumer Reports. Now, he's a discriminating consumer, but sometimes he takes it to that Hamlet point and you end up freezing. Now, for him, that's fine because if he waits too long, I mean, there'll just be another iPhone that comes out. But in a game like this, we don't have that time because we have somebody waiting on us. We have a finite timer on the round, and we have some real consequences to what happens if we go to time, whether we're in the single elimination bracket or the Swiss rounds. So you need to start to decrease your need for complete information, which can be hard. Because for two reasons, I think. The first is because we do have so much information in Dice Masters. There's not a hand that our opponent is hiding from us, or a Dungeon Master screen where we can't see. There is we see all the cards. We know what's happening. But decrease the need. But the other reason that it's hard is because that can sound like you're encouraging someone to just rush in. And that's not the answer either, because that could be suboptimal. It's about finding the balance there. So start to get there. I think what you want to do is recognize when you're doing that, of course, and just try to decrease a little bit. Like, don't let yourself do the math a third time. And try that for several games. And then don't let yourself do the math the second time. Or whatever it is, you know. Stop yourself after a point and say, I have all the information I could possibly get from this. I need to act. The time has come to just do it.
Yeah, I think where I would take this discussion is specifically in playing the odds, right? Like, and I'll go back to it because it's fresh. Game two versus Mike. There were a couple times where I looked.
Wait. Were you in some kind of a tournament recently?
Ish, a little bit.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
And so like there were a couple times in that second game, like if he gets his rolls, he's gonna win. Doesn't matter. There's nothing I can do to prevent that. It doesn't matter what the odds are for him to get those dice or for those rolls, or you know what, how many times he's going to have to parallax. Like, I'm still not going to win. I still have no chance to win unless I buy Bard right now. Mm-hmm. Like, or you know, so like I could have gotten caught in. Oh my gosh, he's got everything he needs to win. He's gonna pull it all next turn. Like, okay, so what? Like, it's still a dice game. You know, like at this point, it doesn't, at that point he had inevitability. So rather than get caught in, you know, just that trap of, oh no, oh no, oh no. Like, okay, decide what you need to do to win. And if you get the opportunity, then at least that step will be out of the way.
Mm-hmm. That's how I felt up in Canada in my top four matchup with Kevin. Because our game one took over 40 minutes. And he beat me in game one. And so I knew if I wanted to win game two, you know, to force a game three, I had to win fast. My Masked Ring team was not built to win fast. So I had to try and go Bard because I had Bard on my team at that point. And, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it didn't pay off, but it was, you know, kind of based on what the situation called for. I just got to play the odds, because if I'm going to win fast, this is the only way I can win fast. And I made that call and went with it, gung-ho.
Spot on, because the other side of this is the other thing that we've borrowed from poker and other games have borrowed from poker, which is the idea of avoiding that results-oriented thinking, which you guys did in those circumstances, and what I try to do as well, and what we should all try to do, is to look to increase your equity in a given situation. You talked about playing the odds. It's the same difference. I need to find the play that gives me the highest chance to win in this scenario right now. Now, that highest possible chance to win might only be 20%. But if that 20% play is the best there is, then that's the one you need to find. And even if you lose that game, that doesn't mean that was the wrong decision. You practiced making the best decision you could at the time. And if you can make playing your games more about making the best decision you can with what you have, while of course sticking to the plan as much as possible too, because you can't lose sight of that. There's a purpose to the deck that you put together. But if you can make the game about those decisions, long haul, you're going to increase dramatically in skill. You're going to feel better while you're playing. You're going to avoid those tilting behaviors. Never completely, but you're going to be better at it than you were. If you can learn to do exactly the behavior that the two of you were discussing, look for the play that gives you the best chance to win and make that play. If everything else is unclear and you don't know what you're doing, say, okay, wait, what gets me to the win? Because if we talk about planning with the end in mind, as we just did a moment ago from what you brought up, Randy, well, obviously the end of the game that you want, the goal is to win. So don't throw spaghetti at a wall and see what sticks. Look for that right noodle that you know is going to stick, and then the metaphor will fall apart. So yeah.
Wow.
I took that metaphor as far as I could. It was just done right about there.
Yeah, I'd say.
I think that's where we can go with Tilt right now. Definitely expect to see an episode about results-oriented thinking pop back up again. It's just such an important task, and I think it really fits well in with this show and the format that we're doing here as well. That's certainly one that's going to be back, maybe not in 2 weeks, but at some point. So that's just such a clutch one. In short, I'd say look for those behaviors in yourself, recognize what triggers them, and then just start to take those little steps to improve it. Don't feel like you need every piece of information. Don't feel like you have to make all the decisions at once. Make the ones that you know you can make. And then, of course, also look to increase that equity in a situation. Look for the play that gives you the best chance to win. And those few things, if you can start to focus on that and play a little more analytically, you'll kick out some of the emotional element that can take over, whether internally or externally, when you go on Tilt. So, anything else that either of you would add in sum here?
Yeah, I got something.
Do it.
Team Ricochet.
Isn't there supposed to be a hashtag in front of that?
Hashtag Team Ricochet.
Okay.
Hashtag National Champion times two. Hashtag hashtags come in threes.
They always have to come in threes. It's a rule. Boom. If you don't know, the reserve pool rule is hashtags come in threes.
That's it.
Oh, JT. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Know that you can, we know that you can spend your time in many ways, and we're truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please do leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Reserve Pool, every Thursday. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Bye.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. Hashtag enough.
Hashtag enough. Hey, guess what? The joke that we really need to bring back is that no one can take it away from me.
Oh boy. You know, so the thing about that, no one can take it away from me, is, and I don't remember where this was said, like, there were a couple of people who took that totally the wrong way.
I know.
Like, took it totally out of context and thought that you were...
That I
which
was
is so funny,
because
you're, like,
forever.
The least arrogant person I've ever met.
Like, only in jest, though. Like, I'll say things to Randy and Stuart, especially Stuart.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes Isaac, when we're playing, just to, like, put them on tilt.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode about how you tilt Stuart, right?
Oh, man, it's so good. So what I was telling them when we were playing Nationals, I just looked them in the eye, serious as I could. I was like, dude, I have unlimited confidence right now. like it's completely unlimited. There's nothing you can say that'll get to me. And then, you know, so then for me to go on and win the thing, like, that was one of the first things Stuart said to me. He's like, dude, you and your unlimited confidence. Seriously? I was like, oh my gosh. I only did that to try and put you on tilt. Anyway.
Man, you calling the judge over against him. I wish I could have seen
the
look on his face.
That was so good. Oh my gosh.
Oh my. Yeah, because that also fits more into the joking Dr. Count von Homash. Master Doctor Count von whatever
who,
whatever titles
who, I don't know if you know
whatever
this or not, but he
given
obviously
him.
Won the 2016 Latverian National Championship.
Well, of course he did. I mean, you know, he's the Latverian. Everybody knows who else could win.
So I mistakenly said that I'm the only 2-time national champion. Whatever. Whoops.
Yeah, sorry. That's true.
Sorry,
Latveria. Oh. Wow.
Good cast.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to stop recording now.